this pandemic has had a long-term impact on how we will change the way that we do business, the way that we run our supply chains, and the amount of risk that we're prepared to take as a business.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast, the number one podcast focusing on the digitization of supply chain. And I'm your host, Global Vice President at SAP, Tom Raftery. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. My name is Tom Raftery with SAP. And with me on the show today, I welcome back Richard. Richard, welcome back to the show. Introduce yourself, please, for people who haven't heard you before.
Sure thing, Tom. Thanks for inviting me back. I don't usually get invited back a second time for anything. My name's Richard Howells. I work in the supply chain team at SAP, and I focus on thought leadership around all things supply chain.
Excellent. Now, we had a chat before starting the podcast, and you know, we were going to have this podcast talk about changing consumer behaviors and buying habits as a result of the pandemic. So do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because there has been huge shifts in consumer behavior, hasn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, pre-pandemic, we were talking a lot about the whole experience economy, being customer-centric and providing individualized products, real-time delivery. And that has been turned on its head in the last few months. I mean, customer centricity is still important, but I'm more concerned about making sure that I get a delivery slot rather than next day delivery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Individualized products is just, do they have the products that I need to survive on? So everything has changed. And people, it's still focused around customer centricity, but how I buy things has changed. I now buy things online. Probably 90% of the goods that I buy now are delivered to me to my doorstep. I'm excited for the time when I can go to the store without a mask on and go shopping again. And I never thought I would say that because I hate going shopping. But you get different. Everyone is ordering online. Different generations. You get the older generation are now embracing the whole e-commerce scenario, and I think that will continue moving forward because you realize that, well, this is easy. I just order something, and a few days later, it turns up. I don't have to go out of the house. I don't have to go anywhere. I don't have to be in the crowds. So I think e-commerce has increased, has probably gone forward 6 years in 6 months.
It's incredible, yeah. On the other hand, to your point about actually going out and looking forward to going back to shops, I think a lot of older people maybe consider going out shopping a kind of a social thing. And now that's all been turned on its head. And now it's not safe for them to go out. And now they do have to do it online.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not just shopping online. Social interaction is now online as well. I mean, Zoom is now part of everyone's vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is using online FaceTime tools or digital tools to communicate with friends and family. It's really changed how people leverage technology. Everybody leverages technology.
I was reading an article. I think it was earlier this year, before the pandemic. It was back in February, about a company in Ireland called Mana Aero. And Mana Aero are a drone company. And they got licensed by the Civil Aviation Authority in Ireland to do deliveries for a restaurant chain called Camille Thai. And so you could open up the Camille Thai application on your phone. You could order the food, and then you had a choice of either human delivery or drone delivery. And if you chose drone delivery, a Google Street Map of your street popped up, and you put down a little pin where you wanted the drone to deliver the meal. And I thought, yeah, that's really cool. It's a nice way of doing it. And then I saw during the pandemic that Mana Aero had now been licensed not just to do that, but actually to deliver groceries and medicines to people, to vulnerable people, particularly in the west of Ireland, who were in self-isolation.
I saw one example on the news this week about a school library delivering school books to the children, and they kids were really excited for getting, first of all, it came by drone, so they could really brag to their friends about getting a drone delivery, and it made them more excited to read the book as well.
fantastic. What other changes are we seeing?
Well, it's really changing the way that we have to, as businesses, serve these customers. I mean, you were talking about drone delivery, and that last mile delivery now is critical. I mean, you look out of your window and you see so many delivery vehicles just delivering that online order every day. We're getting a delivery here. It was every other day before the pandemic, but now it's every day that we're getting a delivery at my house.
Yeah.
So having a different channel and a different distribution network to serve your customers has become critical. And that has meant that businesses have to rethink how they package the goods, how they deliver the goods. So it's a completely new business model. And anyone that doesn't have that direct-to-consumer model as one of their channels now is really hurting. I mean, if they're even in business.
Yeah,
we're seeing pop-up warehouses and the concept of a pop-up warehouse where businesses are putting the warehouses closer to the demand. So they're staging a temporary warehouse, or it could become a permanent warehouse, so that they can better serve and be more responsive to get the goods to that customers. The big retailers have had this option for a long time, because they can use their stores as a distribution center as well. And if they weren't before, they're certainly doing that now, where there are more warehouses than ever around the U.S., whether it's part of a retail store or, as I say, one of these pop-up warehouses that's storing for the short term to serve that customer needs.
Kind of analogous to that is restaurants, because, in the first instance, a lot of restaurants are now doing home deliveries, but also restaurants here, I'm not sure about there, but restaurants here have very strict guidelines on social distancing on between tables. So restaurants particularly that have outdoor spaces, that have tables out of doors, they're going to do far better. If you are a restaurant in Spain, at least, that only has an indoor space, you can only have that, I don't know, is it like 25% or 30% full, whereas the outside can be 50 to 70% full. So, you know, it makes a huge difference as well for restaurants if they have the outdoor space.
Absolutely. I live in the Boston area. And that's working fine in the summer. I'm not looking forward to eating outdoors in November or December in New England.
Ouch. Yeah. Planning? Has planning been affected?
Yes. I mean, it's all the way through the process. I mean, we're seeing businesses who used to do monthly sales and operations planning processes moving to weekly processes because they have to make decisions faster and react to changing demand and uncertain supply. The ones that were doing weekly planning cycles are even going down to daily planning cycles. The whole concept of being able to do simulations of planning so that you can do what-if analysis. What if this, if I have less capacity in my manufacturing facility, can I add an extra shift to take into account the spacing and social distancing? What if the demand is going to spike for this product but completely drop for this product? What if I'm getting orders now at the individual consumer level rather than sending bulk shipments to a university or a hotel? So the demand is still there, but the whole planning scenarios of how you have to satisfy that demand is different because you're getting orders from different places, different levels of different size orders and at a higher volume of orders, because if a retailer is buying it, you get the order once, but it might be 50 different consumers ordering the same quantity of goods. So you have to be able to simulate how to satisfy that, how to pack that, how to plan that, and also how to position that inventory. I talked about pop-up warehouses, but inventory optimization becomes critical then of where I store the finished products, but also where I store intermediates so that I can pack them to order, for example, or pack them differently to how I used to pack them because I'm now dealing with different customers. I'm dealing with individuals rather than businesses from an order-taking perspective. And then that has a knock-on effect of the manufacturing processes.
Yeah.
You have to have more flexible manufacturing. You have to be able to pack things differently. And also from a safety standpoint, manufacturing has been hit. The manufacturing sites have been hit very hard because
particularly the food industry,
high volumes of people.
Yeah, particularly we've seen a lot of food production sites, the kind of meat packing plants and places like that, where there's been outbreaks in the US and in Germany and places as well here in Spain. And, you know, it's got to be really tough for them because the lines there are designed for, you know, people being proximate and now they can't be. So, and this is a thing I've brought up on the podcast, you know, several times before. What choices do they have? I mean, you said maybe they put on an extra shift, but a lot of these places are going, you know, 24/7 anyway. So they, you know, they can't go 48/7. So how do they fix that? You know, and particularly if they have to social distance, then they can't stand up a new line generally because they don't have the space because they're all maxed out on that. So the only way is to increase automation, you have to think. And that's something that, you know, is hard to do in a lot of manufacturing places.
Exactly. I mean, we're seeing that those outbreaks are then affecting the company's brand, and that you've got to be able to respond both ethically to take care of your employees, but also from a brand awareness standpoint as well. I mean, the whole social distancing of everyone being 6 foot apart in a meat processing plant where they're usually shoulder to shoulder is completely alien. You're seeing now the extra cost involved of providing that safety, whether it's through specialty equipment, whether it's through Perspex dividers, mm-hmm. more hand sanitizing, more cleaning down of the equipment, which takes time, separating the shifts completely so that there's a longer changeover between shifts to clean down the equipment, but also no swapping of personnel between shifts. Right. Oh, I'll swap with you because I want to take the day off, but I'll work tonight instead of you. You can't do that anymore because they're in different bubbles.
Right.
Of shifts that can't commingle. So it's all affecting the human aspect of it. And you mentioned the automation. I mean, yes, if you had automated lines, then you wouldn't have this human issue, but you can't automate all of your lines. You can't do it tomorrow either because it's a capital expense. There's a lot of time and money involved. What we're seeing is companies leveraging intelligence and technology to augment the workers so that the people that are allowed on that floor, they have more access to information. They get decision support, having decision to support tools and some level of automation to augment the humans and to increase the productivity of the individuals and the lines that are there is really the short-term opportunities.
We'll be right back.
Elevate your brand with the Sustainable Supply Chain Podcast, the exclusive voice in supply chain sustainability. Last year, this podcast's episode were downloaded 113,000 times by senior executives across the world, with listeners concentrated in the EU, North America, and Asia. Become a sponsor. Lead the conversation. Contact me for sponsorship opportunities and turn downloads into dialogues. Act today. Influence the future.
Yeah, something I've been wondering about is, and you brought up the point yourself just there, is, you know, the fact that you have these longer changeover times and the increased amount of sanitation or sanitizing that has to be done. We were talking specifically there about the meat packing plants, for example, but this applies to everything. I mean, I go to my barber now and, you know, I book online a slot. And I make sure, in my case, I make sure to book it at 9:30 in the morning when he opens. So I'm the first there, you know, and they take in three people at a time and they're in separate rooms. And then the place is sanitized after each person before the next person is allowed in. So that means that they're spending more time doing fewer people, using more resources like sanitizing products that they never had to use before, using disposable kind of towels and things like that, or coverings. All this means increased cost, fewer haircuts done in the case of barbers, fewer meat produced in the case of meatpacking plants. And to your point, that means an increase in costs. So far, a lot of those increased costs haven't been passed on, but they have to be, don't they?
At some point, you would say that the cost of everything will go up. The cost per haircut has, for the company, for the individual barbers or businesses to make money, you can't make money with reduced volumes and increased costs.
Exactly.
For those reduced volumes, unless you increase the cost themselves. And it's amazing to me that the costs of everyday goods hasn't increased dramatically. They may have seen some increase, but probably not at the level that you would have to do for the companies to be making the same profits that they were before.
Yeah.
And you have to appreciate that as a consumer, that that many of these businesses are doing what's right for the consumer in many cases there.
Is that sustainable?
Not without lots and lots of money coming from governments to subsidize things, or from somewhere to subsidize things. So no, it's not sustainable in the long term.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality is, in the long term, we have to get a vaccine, and lots of our customers are looking for and researching vaccines at the moment. And that's the long term. That is the answer, is you have to find a way that we can go back to the new normal, the new abnormal, yeah. As somebody said on one of your podcasts.
Business as abnormal. And where to from here? I mean, you know, to that point.
Well, first of all, I think many companies, or most companies, are doing a great job of protecting their employees in this environment and getting back to work as much as they can. But until we have that vaccine, I don't think we're going to get back to that point of normality. But I think as we move forward, I mean, we need to remember some of the lessons that we've learned that customer centricity concept. And as a consumer, do I really need it delivered to me in the next 6 hours? Do I really need it totally personalized? And I think that some of that will go back to what happened before. But I also think that it's made us more understanding as humans around our environment and what's going on. So I think moving forward, I think, believe it or not, sustainability will have a positive ramifications of this virus. We've seen it in the short term impacts of sustainability of less manufacturing and less pollution, just out of necessity because things have shut down.
Yep.
And we're seeing the bottom of the canals in Venice. We're seeing the Himalaya mountains from cities in India that hadn't seen it in 30 years. And I think that as we look to change our manufacturing processes and be more resilient, I think we'll be taking less risks and have less of a global supply chain than we've had before, or having alternative approaches, alternative sourcing strategies of, I'm not going to get all of my raw materials from this one location because it's the cheapest. Because if there is a problem in the supply chain, all of my eggs are in one basket. I need to be able to have alternative sourcing strategies of where I get my inventory from, whether it's from different companies or the same company but different regions of the world, to reduce that risk. I think companies will start looking at their manufacturing processes and where they were offshoring to completely reduce the costs. They'll look at different strategies for either nearshoring or onshoring key products or key percentages of the products that they manufacture, to ensure that they have the inventory and the ability to continue manufacturing in case there is a shutdown of the supply chain in one way, shape or form. I mean, we've had these before and we've sort of, 3 weeks later, we're back to normal. But I think this pandemic has had a long-term impact on how we will change the way that we do business, the way that we run our supply chains, and the amount of risk that we're prepared to take as a business.
Yeah. It strikes me that supply chains of old were as linear as possible, and now we've got to go to a more complex, almost web structure of supply chains, so that we have multiple suppliers and multiple distribution centers and things like that. So it becomes far more complex to manage. How do we deal with all that?
I think many companies were very much just in time and very lean, and now they're going to be just in case and having a bit more security around the comfort level of being able to satisfy it. But handling that complexity is goes down to digitization, I believe. I mean, I work for a software company. I'm bound to say software systems are the best things ever. When you've got to
hammer, everything looks like a nail, is it?
That's right. But they don't solve all your problems. You've got to have the right business processes in place. You've got to have the right strategies in place, and then leverage the technologies to support those strategies and support those business practices. So having your risk mitigation strategies in place, having your sourcing strategies in place, having your inventory optimization strategies in place, and then leveraging the digitization of the data and the supply chain to actually take into account those strategies, those processes, and run your business based on that, and be able to adjust them over time as things change.
Yeah.
And having the tools that are flexible enough to react to those changes.
Cool.
So having a resilient supply chain, but also the business processes and business systems that can be resilient also.
And agile. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Richard, that's been great. We are coming up towards the 20-minute mark. So is there anything that I haven't asked you that you think I should have, anything that we've not touched on that you think it's important for people to be aware of?
The one area that I didn't touch on is the importance of having your maintenance strategies in place for the equipment as well. Mm-hmm. We talked about having limited capacity of people, but the capacity constraints of equipment is also critical, and making sure that when the people are there, those machines are working and running as intended. And I think, again, digitization becomes important there, of having the ability to drive predictive maintenance strategies to ensure that you fix machines before they break down. You fix equipment before they break down, not fix it when they break down, because they usually break down when they're being used.
If you can just when you want them, Sod's law. Them
because it's trending to break down, so at the next shift changeover, I'll maintain it.
Yeah.
Then it's better utilizing the equipment, the assets, and the people.
Very good. Very good. Richard, if people want to know more about consumer behavior, or about supply chain, or about Richard, where would you have me direct them?
You can find me on Twitter and on LinkedIn, and I'm sure we can share my LinkedIn address and Twitter handle on the podcast notes.
Correct.
You can always get information from ap.com. and specifically the supply chain area within SAP.com. And I write a lot on SAP Brand Voice on Forbes. So if you want to read some of the articles that I've written on this topic and others, just do a search for Richard Howells Forbes and you'll find me.
Excellent. Excellent. Richard, that's been great. Thanks a million for coming on the show today.
No problem. Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure.
Okay, we've come to the end of the show. Thanks everyone for listening. If you'd like to know more about digital supply chains, head on over to sap.com/digitalsupplychain or simply drop me an email to tom.raftery@sap.com. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe to it in your podcast application of choice to get new episodes as soon as they're published. Also, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast. It really does help new people to find the show. Thanks. Catch you all next time.